You are listening to Radio Albion.
Hello, my friends. Welcome to another edition of The Orthodox Nationalist. This is Matthew Raphael Johnson. Today's date is, well, we're at the very early hours of Sunday, the 30th of November, 2025. My book on the Russo-Ukraine War is finished. It's out. It's not available. But it's off. It's off to the publishers. And it's just a matter of time before and I'll let you know the minute it becomes available. But it's done. I'm sick of it. I don't want to talk about it anymore. You know, and the minute it becomes actively available, I will let you know. So we're going to talk about a little bit of that. Not the book itself, but things that stem from it. I want to talk about it. There's a lot to deal with here. A lot of issues I wanted to cover, but then I read the Donald Trump's peace plan for Ukraine. And I had to completely change course. It's going to do something completely different. But, you know, as I said before, when it comes to international relations, to understand how they understand something, the regime understands something, they construct it. They don't look at evidence. They have an image in their mind. Their enemies, their allies, themselves are a story, a narrative that they create. Identities are made rather than given. You know, and as promising as that is, you know, understanding foreign policy in the U.S. today, it's subject to severe limitations because you are dealing with academics after all. And the chief limitation, of course, is that it can never be turned on themselves. And of course, they have to admit that regardless of what's constructed, some form of leftism, socialism, whatever it is objectively true. Those are the limitations of the theory. Everything else is constructed. It's a slight exaggeration to say that there's only the regime and its opposition. That's an oversimplification. But if someone were to believe that, I would understand. Individual states are very important, but they're only one part of the global power structure. Constructivism maintains the myth that states are the only actors in the world stage. But the level of centralization and control over media and higher education is such that any construction of an opponent will be accepted as true and dissenters relegated to the margins. Of course, they have constructed people like me and you. Has nothing to do with who we are. They've invented it. Most schools of thought, like positivism or something like that, they assume that even most people, I think, assume that the understanding with which a government develops and executes policy comes from material. That is, from observation or what's really out there, experience, whatever. Another term for that is reality. Rather, in this case, the interests of the oligarchs define what reality is. And over time, many of them begin to think that's actually what's out there. And worse, will interpret all events using those very filters. So if you were to say that a state or a party within a state is an ally, is only to say that they agree with the dominant construction of the dominant powers. The embedded journalism, the Russo-Ukrainian War of 2022, begins and ends with the construction of Russia as the enemy, the other. Now, different, you know, the regime will go to different, they go to certain, you know, conservatives, they'll go to religious, you know, Protestants especially, they'll go to, you know, leftists, they'll cherry pick whatever they need. So they can go to the social conservatism, which is terrible, you know. Now that, of course, brings in the left. Putin's limitation on foreign investments were before the sanctions. It's approached, you know, the libertarians may be approached with that. Putin's stubborn effort to keep all natural resources under his control, state control. Again, whatever the faction may be, they have a line. All that's true, of course. But that's how they create somewhat of a consensus. This then justifies the use of sanctions and, if needed, warfare. Look, the left is the war party. Vladimir Putin signed a decree approving the strategy for the state national policy of Russia until 2036. This strategy says 95% of people living in Russia full-time should identify themselves primarily as Russians by that year. And why? Because it contributes to the preservation of the historically established state unity and territorial integrity of the Russian Federation, its internal stability, its harmonious development and prosperity of the peoples of the Federation, the strengthening of the unity of the multinational people of the Federation, the Russian nation, as the foundation of a distinctive state civilization. Okay, well, the Russian language and the Russian culture, which is based on orthodoxy, that is the foundation of society, and Putin is not shy in saying that. The point being to remove, you know, any kind of ethnic conflict for the sake of stability and for the sake of truth. But that's not the only reason the regime is going to war. I do think, however, that these are the policies that Putin is engaging in. Of course, extremely popular, that has regime very, very upset. Ukraine was considered going back centuries. It's a spear pointed at Moscow in Western circles. And by this, I mean wealthy, liberal circles that accept the equality of all individuals as atoms and the rejection of any higher loyalty such as a nation. But it also includes people like, the Austrian monarchs, which is a shame, because the only reason the Austrian monarchs functioned up until World War One, the end of World War One, was because Russians put them there. Ukraine was not anti-Russian, not even in the West. A long time ago, well, maybe not a long time ago, but prior to the war breaking out, I wrote and lectured and spoke to you about several opinion polls of Western Ukrainians who were not anti-Russian. So in the center, in the east, of course, you have, they are Russian. Now, what ties all this together is ignorance, as far as the people who are receiving. I'm not talking about Ukrainians. I'm talking about constructivism again. We're talking about the average citizen who's forced to pay for this. Ignorance is of central importance. Johnson's Law states that, number one, the more obscure the country or region, the more the media can lie about it, realizing that very few in the universe could ever contradict them. And number two, the more obscure the country or region, the more ignorance prevails in general, that really anything will be believed it was put forth by a what they call a reliable source. In other words, for a liberal source. The lies of the press, the construction of a friend or a foe, that could be done either through malice or ignorance. The New York Times is somehow considered a reliable source. There's a lot of money there. It is almost entirely Jewish. They are not a reliable source when it comes to issues like nationalism, and especially in the Eastern world. A university may be another one. I mean, because they're assured that no anti-liberalism will ever come out of such places. And when it does, it's cause for great, people notice it. The idea of a reliable source generally is ideological. You get into ad hominem here. I've cited things, and people say, "Well, I don't even know that publication. I don't know that they're not reliable." I say, "Well, no, it's not so much the source; it's what's being said." Now, as far as these peace proposals go, they are based on the construction of the Russian enemy and the course of the war. Because again, that was completely invented and constructed. So the concepts here only make sense if you've already bought into the construction of Putin as an evil dictator who's losing in Ukraine. Now, I notice as I've gone through these, both Putin's and the EU's, a lot of the premises that undergird them, they're not so much false as irrelevant. I mean, they're false too, but applying a peace plan that has been put together within the regime will, of course, derive from their own delusions and projections. Not to mention, the terms used always have an esoteric and exoteric definition. So language is important. This is what Putin said to his Security Council November 21st. He was talking about military operation. I can't remember exactly what, but the reason, in my opinion, is the same. The U.S. administration so far has been unable to secure consent from the Ukrainian side, as Ukraine is opposed to it. Okay, he's talking about the peace plan. Apparently, Ukraine and its European allies continue to entertain the illusion that they can inflict a strategic defeat on Russia in the battlefield. I believe this position is not so much the result of insufficient competence, well, at least I won't go into that now, but rather stems from the absence of objective information about the actual situation on the ground. Okay. The context of that was after the Alaska talks, nothing happened. And he was wondering about that. He was talking about the Russian advance as well, and the relation between Russian invincibility here and the peace talks too. But there was a hesitation, I believe, he said. Of course, the media decides, the media, academia, they are the main constructors. They're not alone, but they're the main ones. Policymakers then in the West are not getting objective information, nor do they want it. You buy my book on the Ukraine war, you will see exactly how important this is, especially when it comes to Zelensky and his psychological state. So let's go through the peace plan of Donald Trump. Number one, Ukraine's sovereignty will be confirmed. I don't know what that means. Certainly sovereignty. You're talking about, you know, a globalized order. But I don't know what confirmed means either. Now, the Europeans say reaffirmed in their version of this. That doesn't tell me anything. Number two, a comprehensive non-aggression agreement will be concluded between, it should be among, Russia, Ukraine, and Europe. All ambiguities of the last 30 years will be considered settled. Number three is a little funny. It is expected that Russia will not invade neighboring countries and NATO will not expand further. It's actually farther. I don't know who wrote this. As if Russia simply invaded for just to expand itself. Russia will not invade neighboring countries. Well, it depends on what the regime is doing there. Invasion is a legitimate way to stop something that is demonstrably harmful to the country. And it's a very last resort. But... Number four, a dialogue will be held between Russia and NATO, mediated by the United States. By the U.S. has been in a state of nonstop war with Russia since the Obama administration, but they're going to be mediators here. To resolve all security issues and create conditions for de-escalation in order to ensure global security and increase opportunities for cooperation and future economic development. The U.S. can't be a mediator anywhere. U.S., the ones that were, you know, they okayed all these terror attacks on the interior of Russia. Future economic development is very important. Multinational corporations are critical in understanding how the regime operates, at least fundamentally. Now, number five is one of these that doesn't really get an explanation. Ukraine will receive reliable security guarantees. From whom? The U.S. is in no position to do anything. NATO certainly isn't. As I've said 100 times before, Russia is the premier military force in the world. She is an absolute machine now that all the, you know, kinks in, from 2022 are out. It's actually extraordinary. No one is going to go up against a battle-hardened, motivated, very well-trained, patriotic force with a very popular president. So I'm not sure who's going to do anything about this. Number six. The size of the Ukrainian armed forces will be limited to 600,000 personnel. Now that's clearly something that Putin has rejected. Ukraine has been reduced to a third world country at least. The last thing in the universe that any public funds need to do is go and fund an army. I don't think they have 600,000 personnel, even in the near future. I mean, the French entire military is 264,000. Number seven, Ukraine agrees to enshrine its constitution that it will not join NATO, and NATO agrees to include in its statutes a provision that Ukraine will not be admitted in the future. Well, a constitution is a piece of paper. How many times in the 90s, in the early 2000s, where Yeltsin and Putin promised, you know, NATO has no interest in the East. The fact that you write it down doesn't make it any better. Number 8. NATO agrees to not station troops in Ukraine. Okay. They shouldn't be there anyway. I mean, the only reason that the U.S. is involved here at all is that she is the colonial ruler of Ukraine. Otherwise, she has no right to even talk about any of this. But despite the fact that number 8 says that there's no troops who are going to be stationed there, number 9 says European fighters, meaning jet fighters, will be stationed in Poland. Now, in my book, I go into a fairly lengthy section on whether the regime sees Poland as the next Ukraine or not. I'm sorry, Ukraine, the second Ukraine. And there's actually factions in the Polish military who think that this is a great idea. Many who, of course, do not. That debate is of tremendous importance. Can we use Poland the same way that we used Ukraine? Now, this is the U.S. guarantee. This is number 10. The U.S. will receive compensation for these guarantees. Now, if Ukraine invades Russia, she will lose the guarantee. Like, you know, Kursk or something like that. If Russia invades Ukraine, in addition to a decisive, coordinated military response, all global sanctions will be reinstated, recognition of the new territory, and all of the benefits of this deal will be revoked. Yeah, they haven't mentioned this yet, but they will recognize some of these territories. And they will lift some sanctions. Sanctions, if you've read my paper, on what a sanction is legally in American law, it's something that a president can, I mean, you need congressional approval for it, but a president can lift it if things are going better, if the purpose of the sanction is actually being accomplished. If Ukraine launches a missile at Moscow or St. Petersburg without cause, the security guarantees will be deemed invalid. You know, I can't get over this coordinated military response from whom? Who's going to do that against the Russian military? And Kiev could just say, you know, we launched a missile or whatever in Moscow, St. Petersburg. We had a cause. There's a lot of weasel words in here. Despite the fact that Ukraine will not be a part of NATO, so you know, number 7 says, doesn't mean they won't do it anyway. Number 11 states, Ukraine is eligible for EU membership and will receive short-term preferential access to the European market while this issue is being considered. What exactly is Ukraine producing that the Europeans can't produce themselves? It certainly can't be agricultural goods. You could have more farmers' riots again. What is Ukraine producing that no one else can? Decisive, coordinated military response, my ass. So they're not going to be a part of NATO, but the EU's okay. Now, number 12 is the economic one. A powerful global package of measures to rebuild Ukraine, including but not limited to the following. The creation of a Ukraine Development Fund to invest in fast-growing industries, including technology, data centers, artificial intelligence. The brain drain from Ukraine started really in the late 80s. There isn't the possibility anymore of anything like that. This is a BlackRock thing, but BlackRock's not stupid enough to finance anything like that. fast-growing industries. The U.S. will cooperate with Ukraine to jointly rebuild, develop, modernize, and operate Ukraine's gas infrastructure, including pipelines and storage facilities, which is another way of saying that the Western world will now control Ukraine's gas. Those facilities were built by Russians. In fact, any industry in Ukraine was built either by the Soviets or the Russian Federation. Joint efforts to rehabilitate war-affected areas for the restoration, reconstruction, and modernization of cities' residential areas. Infrastructure development. Extraction of minerals and natural resources like gas. And the World Bank will develop a special financing package to accelerate these efforts. This is based exclusively, it's delusion. This is one of the most corrupt governments in the world. In my opinion, it has no right to exist at all after what happened in 2014. This has come up before in my talks here and in my writings where, you know, fast-growing industries, there's without even wondering if they have that capacity. Infrastructure development. And who's paying for this? The World Bank, the IMF, I've been tracking this since, if I can remember, my old website, the American Journal of Russian and Slavic Studies, which exists on the Wayback Machine. And over again, they'll send a loan for $1 billion, $2 billion, $5 billion, $10 billion, and they knew they were never going to see it again. There was zero chance on it getting repaid. Now get ready for this. Number 13. Russia will be reintegrated into the global economy. That sounds like a threat. Why? Why would Russia do this? Russia has created an entirely new, that's the whole point of BRICS. The SCO, they came into their own because of the sanctions. It's like a man who's dating kind of an average girl. She breaks up with him in the nastiest way. A hot girl comes around. He falls in love with her. You know, and the average girl comes out and states, you know, well, you know, if you do X, Y, and Z, you know, I'll come back to you. No, I don't want you to know what I do. I don't want you to come back to me. Why would I? But I'm much better off now than I was before. So, under number 13 says the lifting of sanctions will be discussed and agreed upon in stages and on a case-by-case basis. Which, of course, is under the power of the president, can do that. So it's discussed. It doesn't say it's going to happen. Not that Russians care anymore, but the U.S. will enter into a long-term economic cooperation agreement for mutual development in the areas of energy, natural resources, infrastructure, artificial intelligence, rare earth metal extraction projects in the Arctic, other mutually beneficial corporate opportunities. Who are they kidding? You know, early on, when Putin was arresting these Jewish oligarchs, we're going to sell off the oil pipelines. No, this has been nationalized. This implies that it's going to be privatized. It's not going to happen. This is a way to get into Russian natural resources. Now, it's true that in terms of its GDP, oil production is maybe between 9% and 12%. GNP, however, which includes foreign trade, it would be much higher. Russia is not dependent on oil and gas or anything like that. And however you want to define that, oil and gas. What about the machinery? What about the, you know, the tech schools? I mean, there's, you know, however you want to draw that line. Oh, and Russia will be invited to rejoin the G8. Why in heaven's name would they want to do that? It doesn't matter anyway, because it says $100 billion in frozen Russian assets will be invested in U.S.-led efforts to rebuild and invest in Ukraine. It's just, you know, they're asking them to go along with this theft. And the U.S. will receive 50% of the profits from any ventures that come from it. The Europeans will add $100 billion to increase the amount of investment available for Ukraine's reconstruction. And the body that will be mediating that is BlackRock. They've already been positioned. There's no doubt about it. How they interpret things is a separate issue. Frozen European funds will be unfrozen. The remainder, the frozen Russian funds, will be invested in a separate U.S.-Russian investment vehicle that will implement joint projects in specific areas. This fund will be aimed at strengthening relations and increasing common interests to create a strong incentive not to return to warfare. Yet these people live in a world, you know, of course, this is pure theft. As I've said before, the Russians have nationalized plenty of Western firms, probably around the, you know, $100 billion mark. So, you know, they got that money back. But it's just, you know these seem to be more symbolic things, totems, more than any actual reality. Then we leave the economic realm and we go to number 15. Somehow is within the economic realm. I missed it. It depends on the translation that I have. I'm sorry, the version that I have. Anyway, 15. A joint American-Russian working group on security issues will be established to promote and ensure compliance with all provisions of this agreement. I would love to see. This is never going to happen, of course. I would love to see who the Americans would put on there. This working group. The idiots. You see that there's really no coherence to this. They're all over the place. Number 16. Russia will enshrine in law its policy of non-aggression towards Europe and Ukraine. So Russia now is dictating what Russia the laws it can pass. Number 17. U.S. and Russia will agree to extend the validity of treaties on the non-proliferation and control of nuclear weapons, including START 1. Number 18. Ukraine agrees to be a non-nuclear state in accordance with the treaty on the non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. Okay. Ukraine doesn't have the capacity. They don't have the scientific capacity to create nuclear weapons and maintain them properly. Now we're talking about weapons here. I'm not talking about power. Nuclear power in Ukraine was built by Russia. But we're talking about weapons specifically. Ukraine has no choice but to be a non-nuclear state. Number 19. The Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant will be launched under the supervision of the IAEA. And the electricity produced will be distributed equally between Russia and Ukraine, 50-50. First of all, the Russians produced that. They created it. The Ukrainians couldn't maintain it. Now, it's given over to the atomic energy bureaucracy. Number Number 20, both countries undertake to implement educational programs in schools and society aimed at promoting understanding and tolerance of different cultures, and eliminating racism and prejudice. Ugh. Ukraine will adopt EU rules on religious tolerance and the protection of linguistic minorities. Okay, in the Ukrainian case, doesn't mean they're going to do it, though. Both countries agree to abolish all discriminatory measures and guarantee the rights of Ukrainian and Russian media and education. Well, Russia only bans media that is objectively harmful to it. Media, any kind of newspaper is a weapon of war. I don't know if that comes under discrimination, but in Ukraine, the Russian language has been banned, at least on paper. Finally, 21, we get to territories. And this is the issue that everyone's talking about. Crimea, Luhansk, and Donetsk will be recognized as de facto Russian, including by the U.S. De facto. Not de jure. De jure would mean it's legitimate legally. No, these have always been Russian areas. American recognition means absolutely nothing. Now, Kherson and Zaporozhye, also largely Russian-speaking. The Ukrainian forces were pushed out of there, and they voted to become a part of Russia. They really won't be. They'll be frozen along the line of contact, which will mean de facto recognition along the line of contact. They're being deliberately vague. Line of contact either being the eastern or the western border. The fact that they say de facto means it's just as a fait accompli. It's really not recognition in any normal sense. Ukrainian forces will withdraw from the part of Donetsk region that they currently control, and this withdrawal zone will be considered a neutral demilitarized buffer zone, internationally recognized as territory belonging to the Russian Federation. Russian forces will not enter into this demilitarized zone. Well, when the invasion began, the whole concept of behind it was that Ukraine would be a demilitarized zone. That was the point of it. Not having 600,000 men that there's no way it can afford or find. And Russian forces are not going to listen to it. Who's going to stop them? Oh, my Lord. After agreeing on future territorial arrangements, number 22, both the Russian Federation and Ukraine undertake not to change these arrangements by force. Any security guarantees will not apply in the event of a breach of this commitment. You have to buy into a lot of propaganda to even have this matter. This is what I'm saying. From the construction, security guarantees, NATO, they're in no position to do any of this. And I guarantee you, the U.S. will not put itself directly in the line of fire of Russians. Russians have killed legitimately many Western advisors. I mean, they're combatants, of course. You know, of course, the host country is Sweden. It led to some resignations in the government, big scandal. But it seems to be like a lot of things from the Trump administration. It seems to be kind of thrown together. Russia will not prevent Ukraine from using the Dnieper River for commercial activities, and agreements will be reached on the free transport of grain across the Black Sea. I don't recall the Dnieper ever being a concern for the Russian Federation. Number 24 is more ecumenical. A humanitarian committee will be established to resolve the outstanding issues. Remaining POWs and bodies will be exchanged on an all-for-all basis, meaning it's just one-to-one. All civilian detainees and hostages, there's no hostages, will be returned, including children. There's no hostages that are children or anything like that. A family reunification program will be implemented. Measures will be taken to alleviate the suffering of the victims of the conflict. So, yeah, I mean, these are somewhat ecumenical, but really they're not. There's no hostages. The implication is that Russia has them. And, of course, they've never done that. Number 25, Ukraine will hold elections, and I assume these are federal national elections, in 100 days from the signing of this thing. I can only imagine it's going to be so ridiculously rigged. This PTSD population, whatever's left of it, not going to be allowed to vote for, and of course, all nationalist parties, NS parties, Russian, I mean, will be banned from competing. It's the same thing in wherever the regime controls these elections. 26. All parties involved in this will receive full amnesty for their actions during the war and agree not to make any claims or consider any complaints in the future. In other words, that warrant from the ICC would be null. Well, the U.S. has no power over that since it's not a member of the ICC. The ICC will just shrug their shoulders. Amnesty, what are they talking about? Are they talking about Dog the Bounty Hunter? Who's, you know, no one's coming after them. And complaints in the future. In other words, you know, Russia starts discovering more mass graves. Well, you can't bring it up again because something terrible might befall them. Number 27. This agreement will be legally binding. Well, that kind of is implied throughout. Its implementation will be monitored and guaranteed by the Peace Council, which I think is that working group, maybe the same as the working group I just mentioned, headed by President Donald J. Trump, and sanctions will be imposed for violations. You know, I've discussed what legally binding is in terms of international relations. I don't believe in international law. You know, there is simply no enforcement mechanism, so there is no, just simply doesn't matter. That's just rhetoric. So you go through this. First of all, you realize that it's all over the place. It was thrown together very quickly. The implications here, there's, you know, you have to buy into a lot of nonsense in order for any of this to make sense. It implies that the U.S. or NATO has the military capacity to enforce anything. It does not. Russians are not going to be told what laws to pass or where Russian troops can go and where they can't. Russians have won this war. They've been winning this war since the summer of 2022, with no exceptions, with casualties far, far, far less than the Ukrainians. Some of their PMCs took some of the bulk of the casualties early on, Wagner and others. It's very similar to the deal of the century. Maybe not quite as blatantly absurd as a deal of the century with the Palestinian state that I've dealt with many times. But there's so much here that 600,000 men. Anyway, this is now the full text of the European counterproposal. Number one, as I mentioned before, they say, Ukraine's sovereignty will be reconfirmed. Number two is the same. Number three is skipped entirely. They go to number four. Number three is, it is expected that Russia will not invade neighboring countries and NATO will not expand further, as I see. So it's implied in signing this that would be the case. This is an odd way to put it. There are a few differences. Number four says there's going to be dialogue between Russia and NATO to address all security concerns, to create environment to ensure global security and increase the opportunity for connectivity and future economic opportunity. The wording is the same, but it's the same concept. Number five, Ukraine will receive robust security guarantees, I guess from NATO. And get this. Number six, the size of the Ukrainian military be capped at 800,000 in peacetime. The entire Turkish regular forces is 481,000 right now. All branches. Are you kidding me? If there's one reason to just throw this out, it's that. The Russians wanted 40,000. That's really, if that. I don't think they should have much of a standing army at all. They should be a totally neutral state. Number seven, Ukraine joining NATO depends on consensus of NATO members, which presently does not exist. So there's nothing about keeping them out. So this is a bit more extreme than the American version. Number eight, NATO agrees not to permanently station troops under its command in Ukraine in peacetime. But they can in wartime, and they can temporarily. Same thing for fighter jets in Poland and all that. Number 10 is very similar. EU market access, same thing. They use the word robust again. Ukraine Development Fund and all that, very similar. Russia, now they do, number 13, they do say Russia is progressively going to be reintegrated into the global economy. You know, something like that, you have to take time. Sanction relief will be discussed and agreed upon in phases and on a case-by-case basis. Again, same thing, similar to the Americans, but a bit more extreme. Ukraine will be fully reconstructed and compensated financially. So this is very much a Weimar kind of thing. This war was not Russia's fault. Ukraine is the aggressor against Donetsk, going back many years. There's going to be, this number 15, a joint security task force established with the participation of the U.S., Ukraine, Russia, and the Europeans to promote and enforce all the provisions of this agreement. With the Dutch, the Italians, I assume they mean NATO. They would have said it, though. Russia will legislatively enshrine a non-aggression policy towards Europe and Ukraine. Be the weirdest law to say that we will, we cannot and will not be aggressive towards the Baltics. Um, 17, 18, the same, non-nuclear state, proliferation, all of that. Zaporozhye, the nuclear power plant. Build up EU rules on protection of linguistic minorities. territories, 21. Ukraine commits not to recover its occupied sovereign territory through military means. Negotiations on territorial swaps will start from the line of contact. I don't know what that last sentence is. But the very fact that they use the phrase occupied sovereign territory. In other words, it's Ukrainian. These are occupied lands. There's no way something like this could ever be signed. The Dnieper River. I can't use force, all that stuff. Humanitarian committee, very similar. Now, as far as elections go, they'll hold elections as soon as possible. Not in 100 days. Ugh. So the European version, of course, is more extreme. But be careful with the language. And just don't think about it, you know, a treaty today. Think of it 10 years from now, when you have very different people in power. I mean, you can't expect anything else from these two groups of people, you know, the Americans and NATO, who have been at war with Russia for, you know, since Putin took over. Not under Yeltsin, but since Putin took over. Remember, this is not a new Cold War. It's a new Crimean War. There's a big difference. There were no sanctions on Russia in the Cold War. It seems that these were thrown together. Some items were put in to just to be deliberately, you know, no one could sign it with these in it. Satisfies nobody. And as you might expect, Zelensky has both accepted and rejected it. He says he's going to draw a red line at the Ukraine sovereign territory. He's going to use that very same phrase. Remember the former prime minister, Yermak, his head negotiator, of course, is a Jew from a line of rabbis. As long as Zelensky remains president, he will not agree to any land in exchange for peace. Boy, that sounds very familiar. However, when he said that he was going to fight this agreement, the National Anti-Corruption Bureau smashed into his house, actually his apartment, I think, and searched it for something. I don't know what the cause was. I don't think they really need a cause. He's extremely corrupt as a man. You know, it's very easy. And Trump was very, very clear. You stop anyone who rejects this deal for any reason. So Kiev, on the one hand, has rejected the Trump deal, but has also accepted its core terms, whatever that might mean. As of now, it's still under active negotiation. Of course, there's plenty of European leaders who don't want this at all, who want the war to continue. It's not the first time that they've done it. I came across an article, and it's not a very good one. It's, you know, it's a norming article, Mark Episcopos and Marcus Stanley, something called the Quincy Institute of Responsible Statecraft. They explain to us that, well, the 600,000 army, well, that's a size that analysts agree. I don't know who they're talking about. Kiev can realistically sustain without collapsing under economic strain. Well, that can only be true if you don't know a damn thing about the Ukrainian economy. That's more than double what Ukraine sought in 2022. What is so special about the 1991 borders? They're extremely artificial. I'm a nationalist. My life has been nationalism. But you have two nations. There's a border artificially drawn between them. That's a problem. You see what it does to countries in Africa. I guess ultimately it would leave Kiev in control of 80% of its pre-2014 territory. Russia cannot simply drop its claim. You know, Kherson and Zaporozhye are already a part of Russia. That's it. It would be very unjust. A guy from the same institute named Eldar Mamedov says this. The plan smartly sidesteps full capitulation by channeling $100 billion in frozen Russian assets directly to Ukraine's rebuilding. A concession that turns a financial weapon into a tool for recovery. Russia even greenlights Ukraine's path to the EU membership. It has not. With preferential market access during the process, while addressing Moscow's longstanding fears of encirclement without touching NATO directly. Well, Russia is encircled. Not that it matters now. NATO is a paper tiger. And again, I ask you, what does Ukraine produce that the EU doesn't already make? And there's a big battle, of course, over the language issue on this. Ukraine really isn't diverse. You know, you have Russians and you have groups that matter, Russians and Ukrainians. Russians should be in Russia. Ukrainians should be in Ukraine. But I'm not sure how, we've had mass church closures. We've had crackdowns. But EU standards would be no better. They've done the same. It rejects Nazi ideology. I love that one. Well, there was nothing National Socialist about Ukraine to begin with. This is how Mamedov puts it. As a multi-ethnic, multi-religious society, the protection of minority rights as a long-term investment in Ukraine's security should be welcomed by those who claim to be its supporters. Well, that's misleading. There's really only two major ethnicities. And it's an Orthodox state. It's an Orthodox country, overwhelmingly. Yes, I'm sure there's a Tartar somewhere. There might be a Hungarian somewhere that doesn't make it a kaleidoscope of nations. But the nationalists, the so-called national socialist groups that Putin made a big deal about, they were the muscle needed in 2014 against the police. Regardless, they've been wiped out by Russian artillery anyway. There's very few of them left. A former but unnamed U.S. State Department advisor said the following. I don't know what a State Department advisor is, but it seems believable. Kiev seems more interested in reclaiming land than protecting the people living there. Well, they're Russians, especially in Donbass and Crimea, where Russian identity is strong. I've noted before that as long as these civil rights and ethnopolitical issues are not acknowledged, plus in that matter of NATO expansion, there is little hope for peace in the region. Well, I didn't need a State Department advisor, whatever that is, to tell me that. But the delusion that you had from so European leaders. Starmer, Friedrich Merz, Emmanuel Macron, all wanting to dismiss this. And the European counterproposal was something that was drawn up in Berlin. It was actually more extreme at some point. The EU's foreign policy chief, Kaya Kallas, simply just says, weaken Russia, support Ukraine. There's no compromise. There's just endless escalation. Why would Ukraine want to be a part of NATO? I mean, it would cost a fortune. You know, I've been through this. I go through it in the book, how expensive it would be and why. The standardization of everything from training to weaponry. A NATO member has to have weapons and a basic military understanding, ammunition and everything else that's interchangeable with every other one. Which makes sense for a long-standing alliance. It would be extremely expensive, and it wouldn't do anything because NATO can't do anything to assist Ukraine except send it its antique tanks and artillery pieces that get vaporized the minute they get off the truck. He continues, he says, those European leaders who oppose Trump's plan know full well that Ukraine won't be joining NATO. And what's the point of prolonging the war by insisting something both sides know is not going to happen? Well, the point is prolonging the war. They want to huddle this out until Moscow walks away. And it's not the first time that they've tried to destroy talks. I mean, there's some good things in the peace plan, a lot of nonsense in it. You remember April 22. This has been all over the alternative media. I know you know this. Most of my listeners do anyway. Zelensky and Putin edged towards the summit brokered by Turkey and Israel. All right? Zelensky was well aware he had no chance here. He had already lost a huge number of men. Yeah, there were some minor victories early on. There were some kinks in the Russian system that were, very, very quickly ironed out. But what happened? Boris Johnson came into Kiev with a clear message, no deals with war criminals, meaning Russians. That means these deaths of 2 million Ukrainian men, and only men, is on the hands of people like him, clearly. So it wasn't that much longer. After Johnson came in, Putin said, okay, there's no point negotiating anymore. And it wasn't just London doing that. They were egged on by the Biden administration. And it was essentially that Ukraine would be neutral, like Austria was, or Finland. Why was it a problem for those two countries relative to the Soviet Union? Well, because it was the Soviet Union. The U.S. was heavily invested in it. Like 800,000 men, a standing army. Can you imagine? You still have idiots out there who think that Putin wanted to conquer all of Ukraine. He probably could now, but that would be useless. There'll be no purpose to it. Putin stated in 2022 that neutrality, in that sense, the Austrian and the Finland sense, demilitarization, were his main goals. And those goals the West deliberately scuttled. NATO is at fault. And of course, the regime's role in the Maidan Revolution, because they created the Maidan Revolution. I guess there's some people who say that this deal is somewhat realistic. Not every word, of course, there's garbage in it, but there was a period of optimism after the August Trump-Putin summit in Alaska. The Trump administration was very frustrated after that. And that's where the 28-point peace plan came from. Well, Russian concessions began with the core issue that triggered all of this. It's not just NATO, it's also the European Union. There is no way on this planet that Ukraine, given its non-existent economy, its pure black market system, it's like, you know, Kosovo, maybe not entirely based on drugs and prostitutes, but there's some of that. The black market. There's no way that they could pass the criteria. Well, of course they'll just cook the books. They'll make up statistics like they always do. But Ukraine is an EU member. That's like bringing Ghana in terms of economic achievement. Oh, I'm sorry, Russia initially demanded 80,000 men, not 40,000. And I don't see why they would need one really at all, other than a National Guard or something like that. Ukraine wanted 250,000. That was 600,000. The Europeans want 800,000. Without even considering, where is this money coming from? Where are these men coming from? Ukrainian military is in the same tattered state of the Ukrainian economy. Mark Episcopos. He writes this. Talking about the number of men. Well, this is below the current wartime size of the Ukrainian active duty military. It's over 700,000. That level is almost certainly not sustainable in peacetime. The Ukrainian army, 600,000 men, would be by far the largest military in Europe outside of Russia. Indeed, it would be larger than the British, French, and German combined. Ukraine's military power would be further bolstered by a separate security guarantee to the U.S., European intervention, and support in the event of a Russian attack. Of course, that begs the question, why would there be a Russian attack? Russia invaded because the Ukrainian army, with its NATO commanders, was massing on the border of Donetsk. I have all of them. They found it early on, but I didn't need documents to show me that. Clearly, they were. I mean, you could see them. They brought, you know, the ammunition and this is, you know, a poverty-stricken country. And this, you know, by 2022, and this is what the regime has them spending money on. But you have a lot of people claiming that the Trump version is realistic. And of course, I don't think it is. Russian promises of non-aggression. Well, that begs the question. Why would Russia ever enter into the G8? What the hell is a Russian-American security working group and lifting of sanctions? Sanctions were nothing. I mean, maybe initially it hurt, but sanctions were a boon to the Russian economy. The entire structure of the SEO and BRICS, they came into their own because of sanctions. Russia doesn't care. If you can want to personify the economy, it doesn't care. You still have westernized individuals in the Kremlin. Maybe they care as well. One of the reasons that people are being, you know, they're having their doors kicked in for opposing this policy, Yermak of all people, um, I did err. I did say that Yermak was former prime minister. I'm thinking of Arseny Yatsenyuk, who comes from the long line of rabbis. Sorry about that. Nevertheless, he has been a huge part of the negotiating team for Kiev for some time. I'm terrible with names. So a lot of this has to do with American influence. They're kicking in doors because, you know, the U.S. is aware that it's fading. It doesn't have the money. It doesn't have the men. It doesn't even have the political will to do anything about it. You know, they can't really intervene properly. Without, you know, serious, you know, if you go to my book, this is coming out very soon, articles, the combat readiness of, say, the U.S. Navy is something at like 35-40%. And why would, you know, reintegrating Russia into the global economy, that's giving it over to speculators again. What's going to happen when Putin isn't there anymore? But it seems that anything that's going to increase American influence in Ukraine at the EU's expense is going to generate concern in European capital, because the EU is invested heavily, financially, politically, and institutionally in Ukraine's future. Which, you know, given its policy, it doesn't have a future. You know, you have people so stupid saying that, you know, they're treated not just as a partner, but as a prospective member of the EU. Now, not when you're responsible for 2 million men being killed. The war should have been over in April of 22. No one supports the European Union in Eastern Europe. They know what happened in Russia in the 1990s, Ukraine, elsewhere. Unemployment at 80%. That wasn't just a matter of adjustment. The state had to come in and stop it. And again, the U.S. has no right to be involved in any of this except that it is essentially the neocolonial ruler of Ukraine. But these proposals, they're, at this point, they're largely hypothetical. Europe doesn't have an identity, internally or otherwise. It has no geopolitical confidence. It's not so much about these 2 million dead Ukrainians. God knows how many others. But the EU being sidelined, that carries a certain amount of weight. Remember, Ukraine's demographic challenges, which have been severe before the war began, now, with the massive casualties and then the significant outflows of skilled workers and severely long-term uncertainties about population recovery. What are these people talking about? You know, AI investment. But the one thing that they, a few writers have mentioned that there's these corruption probes and people being arrested and all that. And I've covered that before. It's increased more now. Any protest, suddenly over an issue, you know, a corruption issue is created by the U.S. Not over the 2 million dead. No, we have no problem with that. It's just that, you know, someone took a bribe. Zelensky employs corruption probes to remove those whom he considers disloyal. In our normal definition of corruption, the entire system is based on it. It has no right to exist in the first place. And you don't have a non-corrupt part of the government to actually carry it out. It's like the Gambinos keeping tabs on the Bananas. And then saying we're worried about corruption. Regardless of whatever happens here, you know, my book isn't going to be touched by any of it. These are all words on a page, and they're nothing more than that. Remember, at these meetings, there usually are meetings done in secret that handle the big issues, and then the big symbolic meeting, you know, with all the cameras. That's been going on for many, many years, many centuries, actually. So, you know, the only loser to all of this, of course, is Ukraine. Yeah, they really are drafting pregnant women. I don't know what they're doing, but it's actually true. I've seen the video. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for listening. I think I've made my point about these stupid peace proposals. I will talk to you again next week. Bye-bye.